Item number five, which is an updated development in the interim discharge program, Ms. Rebecca Fitzgerald.
Well, good afternoon, members of the board. I'm Rebecca Fitzgerald. I'm a senior environmental scientist on your staff. And I am here to give you an update this afternoon on the development of our agricultural lands discharge program. Sitting next to me is
Merrill, senior water resource control engineer in charge of the Bureau of Enforcement Grants and Land Disposal Unit.
And I don't think we have fancy presentations for moving cogs, but hopefully we'll provide you with some information to keep us rolling on what's going on with our ag program. I'm going to start out with a bit of background on where we are with our program and a little bit of how we've gotten here before I move more into the meat of the presentation, which will be our proposal to revise the scope of the ag program's permit development efforts from one region-wide permit into several commodity or area-specific permits. So the area-specific and commodity-specific permits that we're proposing to develop are not
there.
There you go. Include discharges from or in the areas of vineyard and orchards, lily bulbs, discharges in the Tugu-Lake watershed and the Scott and Shasta River watersheds, Butte Valley, and then looking at discharges from irrigated lands, the pasture grazing lands, and discharges from marijuana cultivation, which Diane will talk a little bit more about, as well as all other types of agricultural discharges. I also want to share with you some comments today that we've heard from our stakeholders in regards to this proposal to separate out our ag program into these commodities and areas. And then Diane will take over from there and speak a little bit more in depth about our options related to discharges from marijuana cultivation. This is a fairly long presentation we've been finding, so I'm going to stop after Roman numeral 2 there and see if you guys have any questions along the way, but feel free to interrupt me as I go as well. Before I get too far into this topic, I would like to explain how we've started to think about our ag program, where it is more than just any one permit that is becoming composed of existing mechanisms, including our permits, permits that we have in place, for example, for dairies and confined animal feeding operations, as well as mechanisms and permits that we hope to put in place in the coming years. It also includes our outreach and education and our grant efforts, as well as the complaint and investigation and enforcement piece when needed. And I just wanted to point out that most of what I'm going to speak to today is focused kind of in this category on what we still hope to develop that's in front of us. We have made substantial progress, I think, on developing permits to address agricultural discharges over the last few years. Our goal has been to address discharges both to surface water bodies as well as to groundwater from agricultural operations, including the overapplication of fertilizers and pesticides, pathogens, erosion of sediment, discharges of pollutants that might be in tailwater return flows, and the removal and suppression of riparian vegetation and how it kind of impacts on water temperatures. Since 2011, we have been working with the stakeholder advisory group, which just turned out to be a really great group, to develop our ag program permit. And with their input, we focused on researching and writing a single region-wide permit, so either a waste discharge requirement or a conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements, that would address all types of agricultural discharges in the region. This is what we've been working on over the past 2 years. We've also developed a tiered permitting framework that is based on the threat to water quality and attempts to reward stewardship. We have drafted water quality performance standards and a concept of implementation that relies on the execution of best management practices on the farm. We've worked on the contents of what a farm water quality management plan might include in order to document those BMPs and provide some permit compliance. We've discussed options for third-party certifications and the ability of farmers to work in groups. And we've also started to talk about what types of monitoring might be appropriate and what reporting requirements might be appropriate. Now, as I've already kind of mentioned, over these last 2 years, we have been working on a single region-wide permit to address discharge from all these different types of ag, from vineyards, orchards, row and field crops, those irrigated pasture and forage crops where there was a tailwater runoff. We were including wholesale nurseries, and we were also including discharges from medicinal marijuana. After working with the group and after developing the components that I just discussed, we're now seeing some value in separating these commodities and areas out into their own specific type of permit or effort. And so what are those? We would like to focus efforts in the near term on developing permits for discharges from or in vineyards and orchards, from the easterly bulb cultivation up in Delmar County, and in the Tule Lake watershed. We also propose to rely on TMDL waivers that are already in place and seem to be working in the Scott and Shasta River valleys, and then consider revisions to those waivers when they expire. We propose to conduct surface and groundwater monitoring in Butte Valley prior to developing a permit for that basin. We would like to rely on the statewide grazing regulatory action plan that's under developed by state board staff as well as regional board staff to address not only irrigated pasture lands but all of our grazing lands in the region. We're proposing to consider regulatory or permitting options for discharges from marijuana cultivation, which Dan will speak to, and then address all the other types of ag as needed through education, individual WDRs, or enforcement. And I'm going to go into some detail on each one of these eight here later in the presentation. But first, I would like to give you some perspective about the distribution of our ag here on the North Coast, and hopefully attached to the presentations are these maps on the full 8.5x11 sheets, because I know you can't see all the detail when it's presented up here. But just to cover a little bit of this, these, what you see here, identified on the map and colored in, are the traditional type of agricultural lands that we have in the North Coast. Down here in the southern part of the region, and we're in Snow County, we have our dairy belt. We have the vineyards depicted in this darker purple in Snow County. This is Dry Creek Valley and Alexander Valley, and some of the orchards are more over here in the Sebastopol West County area. Mendocino County also has vineyards and orchards in Ukiah Valley, and more vineyards as well as some orchards in Anderson Valley. Here's Potter Valley right here, which is a mix of vineyards, and I would say kind of the alfalfa hay and pasture ag type. And then there's a few little that I'm afraid don't show up too well on this map, but a few little dots of mostly alfalfa hay and pasture scattered throughout the rest of the region. And you know, one of the reasons that you don't see them here, even though it's not the best projection, but they are pretty scattered and they are pretty small throughout the rest of the region. In Humboldt Bay, here you can look right out the window, you can see some of the dairy lands that are mapped on this map and also at the Arcata Bottoms. In Delmar County, we have a concentration of ag that's some dairies as well as the Easter lily bulbs up on the north side of Smith River. This is the Scott River Valley, where you got mostly alfalfa hay and pasture. The Scott River Valley, which has some more mixed ag, but still is primarily, I would say, the hay and pasture type. And then Butte Valley is even more of a mixed agricultural basin. And Tule Lake is also mixed ag of crops and grains and alfalfa hay and pasture. And we don't have marijuana cultivation mapped on this. And we don't know what its acres are, but you can guess that it's pretty liberally sprinkled throughout. What you see over here on the acreage type, these acres here show it by the crop type as it's mapped. This is based, this is 2012 data that comes from the U.S. Department of Ag's GIS layer. And then it's, we try to group it into the commodity or area that you see here, and that we're talking about in the sense of our scoping proposal. I also wanted to give you some perspective of how ag fits in with the rest of the region. This here shows some of our timberland acreage in the North Coast. The darker green is the U.S. Forest Service a land cover. And then this lighter green is all the rest of the timberland in the region. So it's primarily private timberland, although there's some public land mixed in, BLM land, other public non-U.S. Forest Service acreage in there. So that totals up to a pretty significant chunk of our region, obviously. When you combine all that together, and then also add in some significant acres for shrubland and grassland, you get what you see here of the land cover of the North Coast region. And I should highlight that there's a lot of grazing on these lighter colored, kind of the oranges and tans that represent the shrubland and the grasslands. And we hope that the statewide grazing regulatory action plan will help address discharges that could be coming from those grazing activities. So here's just a bit of a summary chart so you can see some relative percentages. When we're talking here today about discharges from agricultural operations, it really does represent a small percentage of the overall region, with many much larger percentages in the other types of land covers that represent the whole. So I wanted to bring us back to just this real quick to again make the point that while it is maybe 3% of the acreage of the region, you know, here are where we have our agricultural operations, and we have, through this rescoping proposal, an opportunity to address the significant discharges coming off of these lands. And I'm highlighting here where we intend to focus, or propose to focus our efforts for the next few years on Sonoma and Mendocino County as vineyards and orchards, lily bulbs, and into the lake. So I've already hinted a little bit about why we are making this proposal. And this slide provides an opportunity to touch on some more reasons. We had some difficulties with a single region-wide approach to addressing discharges from ag. As there were general requirements, they didn't always match the unique landscapes and agricultural types. For example, our varying vegetation is much different here along the coast than it is, for example, into the lake watershed. We struggled with how to account for the wide variety of climates, hydrology, soil types, and ag practices, as well as just vegetation. And we struggled with how to do so in a real clear way that would be easy for us all to interpret. We found that even low-risk farms would likely be subject to permitting requirements, as well as fees, and would take staff resources just to ensure that those farms were accounted for in the permitting system. In light of the revamping of the statewide effort to develop the grazing program there, we saw that some of our efforts were likely to be duplicated. And we were also finding challenges with the overlap between the ongoing requirements in the Scott and the Shasta River watersheds with the TMDL layers there. And so, in addition to that, there are some advantages with the commodity or area-specific approach that we wanted to highlight. We think that this gives us a lot more flexibility to focus on our high priorities. We can better tailor the requirements to the commodity or the area. It allows us in the Scott and Shasta River valleys to continue our efforts with the TMDL waivers. And it also provides us with an opportunity to coordinate a little bit better with some of the efforts that are happening with the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Board's vineyard permit that they're developing, with what's happening in the Klamath with K-Bump and K-Tap for the Tule Lake watershed, and also with some monitoring that's ongoing for the eastern lily bulbs. I think I am just a bit off on my slides here, I apologize. This is what happens when it's behind you. So there's the slide I was just speaking to. So I would like to take a few minutes now to speak to some of the details for how we envision moving forward with each of the 8 commodities or areas identified. So for the 3 permits that we propose to develop in the near term, we will continue to rely on many of the concepts that we have been developing over the last 2 years. So what are some of those concepts that we've been working on? We expect that for vineyards and orchards, for the lily bulbs, for Tule Lake, where we want to focus in the near term, we would expect these permits to be general WDRs or conditional waivers of WDRs and have many of the same features that we've already been talking about over the last 2 years. That they have a tiered framework that's based on risk, with fewer requirements, with proven stewardship. That they include similar performance standards, rely on DMPs, and have options for group planning and third parties. We also intend to use some of the monitoring concepts that we've already been talking through of BMP verification and effectiveness with in-stream water sampling and required remover appropriate. And then to specifically talk to what we're proposing for discharges from vineyards and orchards, I already just briefly mentioned that we would like to coordinate the timing and the requirements as much as we can with what's happening in the San Francisco Bay region's vineyard permitting efforts out of Sonoma and Napa Valleys. We also want to build on some opportunities for third-party certification programs in Sonoma and Mendocino counties that the RCDs are working on. Fish-friendly farming is another. Sonoma County Ag Commissioner is working with their vineyard ordinance, and I think there's a lot of opportunities for us to overlap and work together. And we still have some work to do on third-party programs, developing clear criteria and verifying the programs, but by really touching on just that commodity, there's more opportunity to coordinate. In regards to discharges from lily bulb cultivation, we are moving towards a specific commodity-based permit here is what we're thinking about. And this is to, as I mentioned, the lily bulbs up there in Del Mar County. One of the benefits of us rescoping is an opportunity to coordinate the permit requirements with our monitoring effort that's happening up there, which I wanted to speak to just a little briefly. We recently initiated a monitoring effort to determine if contaminants such as pesticides and nutrients and metals are being found in surface water and in some depositional stream sediments in very small ag-dominated watersheds. We're looking at toxicity as well. We initiated this monitoring effort in response to concerns raised by stakeholders and based on our own understanding of agricultural practices up there. We hope to, one, better understand current water quality, see if there is a relationship between concentrations over time and the level of ag intensity, and see if we do see any trends. We hope to come back and repeat this in a few years. We started it this last summer and we'll continue it through next spring. And I should give some credit here to our surface water ambient monitoring program, which is providing the funding, as well as to the landowners over up there, which are helping us with some access. For the Tule Lake watershed, we propose to develop a specific permit that addresses ag discharges within the geographic area of the Tule Lake watershed, the land that kind of drains to the Tule Lake sumps. And so this would include then all the different types of discharges from the different types of commodities within that area. So row, field crops, irrigated pasture, forage crops, winter's tail, water mouth, as well as associated activities that support those ag lands. Tule Lake Irrigation District and the Klamath Water Users Association have requested an individual permit. And we see that there is value in developing a specific permit unique to the hydrology and the plumbing and the crop types that are up there. And you'll be hearing a little bit more more about this from Clayton as well. We propose to work closely with the Irrigation District, the Water Users Association, as well as the other stakeholders of the tribal community, the environmental community, as we move forward with this. In the Scott and Shasta River watersheds, for discharges from agricultural lands here, we propose to continue to rely upon the TMDL waivers that are already in place, that you're well aware of and familiar with. They will expire in October 2017. And since these waivers were developed as part of TMDL implementation efforts, they really are focused on addressing the pollutants that are associated with those TMDLs. So as part of the renewal process, we're proposing that we would look at the scope of those TMDL waivers and see if it's appropriate to expand the coverage to other pollutants in order to align with the water quality performance standards that we've been already working with under the full region-wide ag program scope. So some examples of this, of standards that might be included in a revised TMDL waiver are in the Shasta River watershed, erosion and sediment control standards. In the Scott, focusing a little bit more on nutrients and fertilizers. And then in both watersheds, looking at pesticides. I think that there's recognition that a lot of BMPs are already being implemented in these two watersheds through the TMDL waivers get at these other pollutants, but we do want to consider looking at a broader scope to address all ag discharges. The Butte Valley is a really unique little valley in our region. It's mostly a closed basin. I think it's hydrologically connected to the climate only during the wettest of years. And here we would like to spend a little time conducting surface and groundwater monitoring to get a better assessment of the risk to water quality in the basin. So we're not permitting to, we're not proposing to schedule a permit at this time. So it's more of a long-term effort up there in Butte Valley. For grazing activities, I want to start by clarifying the scope of what we have been considering under a single region-wide permit, because it was fairly limited and would only cover discharges from private irrigation, irrigated pasture with tailwater runoff. We were planning to rely on existing permits that address grazing land on public land through a U.S. Forest Service waiver. And then we wanted to focus on where there's just tailwater runoff. So under our new rescoping proposal, we suggest to continue to rely on the U.S. Forest Service waiver and our existing permits for dairies. And also continue to rely on Scott and Shasta to address any discharges from grazing activities there. But discharges from all other private grazing activities, we're proposing to just move forward and have coverage under the statewide grazing project. For discharges from marijuana cultivation, again, as part of the single region-wide permit scope we had been working under, we were just looking at discharges from medicinal marijuana cultivation. So now we may expand coverage for all marijuana cultivation. And there are several options, and pretty much I'm just sort of teeing this up for Diana to touch on after I'm through speaking. So that leaves all the other types of agricultural discharges that we haven't specifically identified. For these, we are not proposing at this time any new programmatic permits for any other type of commodity or area that haven't already specifically discussed. Instead, we propose to develop them on a case-by-case basis, have it be more complaint-based, and we have the option of doing individual WDRs if we do see any discharges that need to be addressed, and of course, we always have our enforcement actions available to us. So that brings me through the end of part two, and I just wanted to pause for a bit and see if you have any questions at this stage about the content of our rescoping proposal.
Come to questions.
All right. So I would like to just share a little bit with you guys about what we've been hearing from our stakeholder advisory group about this proposal. We brought the full membership together in Reading about 2 weeks ago and laid this out for them and were able to hear some comment back. Towards the end of the meeting, we took a straw poll and tried to get a sense of whether or not there was support for the rescoping proposal. And 22 of the 24 members that were present put a thumbs up and said that they were in support, and that represents a pretty good scope of the range of agricultural agency tribal environmental interests that were represented there. Not all of our members were present, certainly, but we felt like what we got was very much appreciated. The two remaining members who were unable to express support at that time, one of them did express support for a commodity-specific approach, but also expressed concern about agricultural areas being left out of a more immediate permit mechanism. And then another member requested more information on the specifics of the proposal before being able to say yay or nay. And both of these members, I want to say, also submitted some written comments, which I very much appreciated, since our Reading meeting. So I'm going to do my best to summarize their concerns in the next few slides, as well as some of the other concerns that we've heard from our stakeholders. So we have heard that the Regional Water Board must be able to ensure that all potential and actual non-point source discharges are addressed. And I want to say that staff does intend to address non-point source discharges, with our initial focus being on the commodities and areas that we specify in our scoping proposal. For the others, we intend to address discharges through other mechanisms or on a more case-by-case basis. Again, through the use of individual permits, WDRs, enforcement actions where appropriate, as well as our education outreach and grant efforts too. We've heard that there may be some duplicative requirements and the potential for multiple permits needed where there's one landowner that has several different types of commodities, which is, you know, pretty possible in the North Coast, where we could have a large ranch that has vineyards and is grazing some cows and may even have some non-industrial timberland on it. You know, we certainly hear this concern. We're looking for opportunities to streamline and integrate our permit requirements more. And so this comment I really appreciated hearing. We heard that there are vineyard differences that exist between Mendocino and Sonoma counties and what's happening in the San Francisco Bay region in Napa and Sonoma valleys. Differences in economics and climate and water use, for example. And we do intend to work closely with Region 2 and coordinate our two vineyard permitting efforts and try to provide consistency, but we also recognize that there are some differences and it's not likely that those two permits are going to be 100% in line with each other. And we also have several different third-party opportunities, especially in the vineyard orchard world, that we think can help provide some of that unique support that and some tease out some of the individual BMPs to address individual land uses or practices. We also heard some concerns that additional time may be needed to develop all of the area or commodity-specific permits more times than we would have taken to do a single region-wide permit. We do recognize that, you know, this concern. We expect that, however, that one or more of our commodity or area-specific permits will actually hopefully get into place and start to be implemented on the ground before we could have a single permit before you for your consideration. We've also heard that multiple permit processes are harder for those stakeholders that have interests in the multiple permits to be a part of this process. We certainly recognize this burden. We're working on options to try to make it easier for those stakeholders. Perhaps we continue to keep our full advisory group coming back to discuss regional issues with some regularity. We've heard concerns about separating permits and that it could lead to unequal permit requirements. We really intend to be consistent in how we set up our performance standards across all of the permits, but we do recognize that we're going to try to allow some flexibility in what the compliance measures could be within the different commodities and geographic areas. We've also heard support for the rescoping proposal, a few of which I wanted to highlight here. We've heard that it does allow for those differences in permit requirements to account for differences that are found throughout the region in geography and in commodities, that it's more localized, that it's a more tailored approach, and those were seen as positives. We heard that the rescoping allows us to prioritize our areas and our crops within the region so that we're addressing the most serious known water quality problems for permit development first. We've heard support for coordinating with the Napa and Sonoma vineyard permits out of Region 2, out of the San Francisco region. We've heard support for keeping the TMDL waivers in the Scott and Shasta going forth as they currently are. And we've heard support for an area-wide approach for the Tule Lake watershed, and also support for doing some monitoring in Butte Valley, especially for groundwater. We also heard comments regarding several issues that we are still quite aware of, we still have some work to do on. We still need to research and consider many of these points, regardless of how we move forward, as a single region-wide permit or as a kind of broken-out specific commodity area-based permits. We still need to look at what monitoring and reporting requirements could be. We need to look at how we want to incorporate third-party certifications, make sure we incorporate the five key elements of the non-point source policy. We're going to need to look at the end-of-day degradation policy and do an analysis there. We'll have CEQA to undertake still. And we need to develop some timelines for how to move forward with the rescoping proposal and these three permits should we move in that direction. Which brings me to, what are our next steps? We're looking forward to hearing from you today, and if we do rescope, we will realign our stakeholder advisory group to try to match up some of the subgroups with these area and commodity specific areas. We've been talking with our membership there. And we really do, as a next step, need to develop some timelines and due dates for the commodity or area-specific permits, especially the big three of vineyards and orchards, Tule Lake, and Lily Bulbs. If we do not rescope, we'll continue along the single region-wide permit effort. I do want to say, in regards to the timing of the big three, if you want to call them that, is that we anticipate bringing them to you in kind of a staggered sequence. We won't bring each of the three to you for your consideration or to the public for public review at the same time. I think in reality, your staff will be working on these somewhat at the same time, but they will be staggered in a little bit of a sequence, and we do need to develop what those potential timelines could be. So my recommendation I leave you with is to revise the scope of our ag permitting effort from one region wide into these different commodity or area specific permits. So with that, I think I'll turn it back to you if you'd like to take questions on this, or we could go straight into some options for marijuana permitting.
Let's actually stop right here and do some questions on this, and we'll take the marijuana on all on its own. How's that?
I just got a question or made a point several times. I'm as worried about us having a good index on our website so that someone from the public can. I mean, we're expanding, we're getting more sophisticated, I understand why we're doing this, but I want us to think of someone in the public that wants to use our website and find something. So I actually thought one of your earlier slides might be the finder's map. But I really wanted to think about that because we have an obligation to find some way to communicate to the public in a reasonable amount of time and searching. That is, as we go on with these more individualistic approaches, it's going to be a bigger and bigger problem. And so I would want us to have a way to communicate what our regulations actually are to a broad scope of the public in our website. And just to keep thinking about that and make sure that we have several different approaches.
I agree. We have a website that does highlight some of the existing permits that we already have when they go to our ACT program page, but we're also trying to revamp it right now. So
I sort of
right
my
point.
Minds on it, but I got to work harder.
You're right on point. I need to revise it a bit.
Other comments or questions? I have a couple comments or a couple questions. For one thing, I'm in support of the rescope of this process. I mean, I believe that 2 years ago, I exuded some doubt about how a grant program was going to work. And I think that, you know, there was much done here. There's no doubt. There's a lot of work that's really good that I think set the basis for how you go from here. I think what you've done is very valuable, right? And that to rescope this thing from here and to change course a bit, I think you come out with better products, all the way around, regulatory products, and I think also we come out with a better end product for users out here. Same time, a couple questions. So we were looking at, I would imagine, with one permit, one CEQA document, now would we be running into having 5 separate SIP analysis in this process?
It's certainly likely, yes. There's an opportunity for us to coordinate CEQA with what the San Francisco Bay region is doing for vineyards and orchards. They actually have some contract funds available that we want to tap into. But yes, we're going to have a different CEQA analysis than the lily or for the lily and the lily bulbs and the vineyards and orchards.
But at the same time, they're staggered anyway. So I mean, you essentially carve them out as separate projects.
Yes. And that does make it in some ways a little easier because the project scope is smaller and a little bit easier to define and predict what potential environmental impacts could result from it. So in some ways it's a little simpler.
Let me ask you too, so something, Rebecca, like a dairy that's covered under a dairy permit, does the dairy operations in their entirety be covered then? If a dairy operation is not only doing, you know, the dairy part, if they're growing silage or have row crop, that kind of thing going on, is that covered under the dairy permit? Have you envisioned that? Have you thought?
We've been looking at that. Most of the, do you want to take it?
I was just going to say that it's not so Tom, that any forage crops that are grown for the dairy cattle themselves are already part of the dairy.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yes.
If they're growing other or producing other ag commodities that aren't for the dairy, then that would need to come under this program. And we potentially have two permits. Our effort will be to try to align the monitoring and the reporting requirements so that it can be passed and done in a single reporting only. Those type of details we're still working on.
A couple other just smaller things, maybe smaller, too late TID. It looks like they could potentially be dropping that permit, in essence.
Yes.
And doing it that way, and we would essentially be certifying a program that they would run.
That's an option right now. We've talked to them a little bit about them being kind of an organizer as you know, of all of the growers within their district, at least having a planning and perhaps enrollment facilitation role. And we need to sit down and have a continued conversation with them, with the Klamath Water Users Association, as well as the other stakeholders, to see how that might fit.
One last question, Rebecca. On the Sonoma County issue, I've looked at VESCO, and I've looked at some of the third-party programs out there. Mendocino County, as far as I know, doesn't have a grading permit or a grading ordinance themselves.
That's correct.
Yes, so VESCO is in of itself a grading erosion control ordinance that has governance through that commissioner's office. So how would we then have a common commodity base that gets to ag and vineyard? And in Mendocino County, are we in essence looking, because we have a bit of difference just between county governments that's been set up. There are some third-party programs out there, as you showed, like the Wine Code or some others, Fish Friendly Farming and others that have legs as well. But I could see that, you know, there's a little bit of just difference between Sonoma and Mendocino County and how they have governance set up that we would potentially rely on as a permitting mechanism.
Right. I think we have a really great opportunity in what's going on right now in Sonoma County with their vineyard ordinance, and their ag commissioner is interested in playing almost a third-party certification role, a very formal role that is not quite perhaps as fleshed out in Mendocino County, as they lack a vineyard ordinance and a grading ordinance up there. But there is the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District has some assessment capabilities and technical assistance capabilities up there. And I think we can get some other third-party certification. Fish Friendly Farming has a presence up in Mendocino County. So there's, I think, some other opportunities for group plans and third-party certification outside of the county permit mechanisms. I think it's a benefit to coordinate the permit mechanisms when they're there, absolutely, but I don't think they're also 100% necessary for us to get where we need to go.
No.
I just have to chime in here. This is my question to council. I just want to be very clear that we're at very early stages of determining whether Sonoma County's program could meet all of our needs for some of them. So I just want to make sure everybody realizes that it's not a foregone conclusion that Vestville would be able to satisfy all our water quality requirements and not. And we're certainly doing the outreach and trying to capture those efficiencies of third party programs, but we're at very early stage on that.
No, Sam, I appreciate the point. I'm in no way suggesting today that Vestville meets our requirements or that we would use Vestville. I'm just using it as an example that, and I would encourage, by the way, staff, that you look to existing opportunities or programs out here that would be potentially useful, viable, or a piece of a puzzle of regulatory coverage to these programs. I think that's the theme we've talked about throughout the morning and today. And I think if we had a lot of the programs out here, we would evaluate them for their effectiveness to fulfill the permit requirements, and I would encourage that. That's simply it. So, I don't think you need, and we'll get to marijuana in a minute here, is it, I don't think you need our permission. You're not asking for permission to rescope this thing, so do you need direction from us as a board to do this? Is there, what is next steps here?
So staff has made our recommendation to rescope, and there's strong feedback to not go in that direction, we need to hear that. But absent hearing the negative, we will proceed.
Okay, well, let me pose this to
official. Well,
I know I don't necessarily think you need a resolution or decision out of our board, but I think in fairness to pose the question, is there any opposition from the board?
Can we hear the comments first before you make
in one moment you can, but I'm just trying to figure a way forward.
Can they hear that?
Can you please wait a minute?
I asked you a question. Can they hear that first before you make a decision?
Can you?
It's just a request. Can we hear the comments first before you make that decision?
Yes, we're making no decision. I'm simply just asking board members if they have an opposition to what they have heard today.
But maybe, can't they hear the rest
of it? I've got a sticker card for you over here in your hands. Okay.
But I would like them to hear it before they declare where they are. I'd like to have them hear everybody.
At this point, having heard what we've heard, Mr. Chair, I'm in favor of rescoping, but I understand we have a speaker card and we'll hear more information, upon which my opinion may change.
Fair enough. Thank you. I'm just trying to figure out the way forward. Okay? Okay, so let's do this. We will get to that in a minute. Felice, yours is the only speaker card I have.
No.
And before we take marijuana on, how about you put into this? Actually, I have two speaker cards. How about you come in front of us and...
Nope, there's no one.
You got it. Yeah, that's it. Felice, welcome to talk with us, please.
My name is Felice Pace. I represent the Redwood chapter of the Sierra Club and the Climate Forest Alliance, both on the advisory committee and here today. I'd like to ask for a little more time. I've studied these things extensively, and I'd like to ask you for 5 minutes or so to make my comments.
I do not have a problem detailing if I'm interested in.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I have to do a little correction to Rebecca. The Lost River is connected every year to the Klamath River. There's a tremendous amount of water that is diverted both ways in the wintertime from the Lost and in the summertime, and then it's pumped through Sheepy Ridge to exit into the Klamath River through the agricultural wastewater, through the straits, the Klamath Straits. And I've asked staff to evaluate whether those pumps and interbasin transfer and those pumps that pump water out of the Lost to the Klamath, back to the Klamath, require an NPDES permit. I don't know if we're going to get that evaluation or not, but I have asked for it. I kind of want to point out that the poll that was conducted that Rebecca referred to kind of bothers me that she referred to that, because there's about 20 ag people in the room. Farm bureaus from counties, State Farm Bureau, RCDs, and there were very few environmental interests in the room. So I don't think that poll means much. I don't think it was appropriate to present it as if it was an endorsement. Let me say briefly how we got here. 40 years of the Clean Water Act, and the BMP approach has been the approach for agriculture through all that period. And it's been a failure in many places. In the Chesapeake, after 20 years, they declared it a failure. The reason is because, and EPA tells us that right now, and for many years now, urban stormwater and agricultural discharges are the number one pollutants in our rivers and our estuaries. They're the number one issue that we have. I'm not optimistic about this process. I don't feel that we're heading towards a program that complies with the Clean Water Act in Port of Cologne. Specifically, there are things in this proposal I really like and support. One is continuing with S&S waivers, but part of that was that they said we're going to add in the other requirements to that along the way when we redo the those. So it's conditional on that. I also support prioritizing areas for treatment in terms of developing programs, and these group programs, these area-wide programs, make a lot of sense to me. I support that. I don't think it's necessary to fragment a regulatory program in order to do that, as proposed by the staff. The State Water Resources Control Board's 9-point policy, there's 5 key elements, and I would like to ask that staff supply you with those, because those are really a criteria for both being effective and being legally compliant. And I don't think we're there. I don't think we're there right now. Reliance on secret ranch plans is a quote, is a problem. The state law requires protection of trade secrets. They must be redacted before providing documents that have them to the public. However, the Farm Bureau has advanced a very expansive definition of that requirement. Thus, this is quoting from November 7, 2012 letter from the state California Farm Bureau Federation. Thus, the regional board must acknowledge that farm-specific information, including pesticide application, nutrient management, irrigation practices, crop rotations, best management practices, etc., are intellectual property, trade secrets, and proprietary information. As such, water quality plans must remain on farm, and that must be secret, and are not available to the public. So, I have asked the EO to have the council provide both you and the committee with some legal presentation about, the legality of secret ranch and reliance on those for compliance, and what is and isn't a secret. I don't know if we're going to get that, but I've asked for it. Now, this problem, one of the big problems is this all other branching heads. Essentially, the staff is proposing to continue the status quo for most of the region, most of the land area in the region. That would be complaint-driven, just like it is now. I don't think that's legally compliant with the non-point source policy. I think it also omits key areas. For example, there's a lot of bulb growing in more and more all the time in the lower Trinity River. These bulb, same kind of bulb farms, similar, that we have out in the plain, well, they're growing along the river, and they need to be, they need to come in and get permits. Also, you know, the vineyards are moving. They're moving to the coast because of the climate change. And they're going to be, and, you know, we have a lot of that in the Orleans area now, for example, in the mid-Klamath. So I just don't think it's neither necessary nor compliant to have this other category that's essentially not regulated. Ag is dynamic over time. Strawberries were not in Deep Valley 30 years ago. They were not. Round Valley. What if all of a sudden we get an industry, an ag industry in Round Valley? I mentioned there's a problem with that in equity, too. Everybody needs to be treated the same, you know? And we need a program that treats everybody the same, not that does different things in different areas. And I'm talking about, so this idea, I also am very concerned about these multiple permits for the same operation that we're getting into, and I think we need some kind of master program, something like what we heard about this morning, you know, when we apply to agriculture, so different permits can be unified into one permit. The third-party programs are a problem, and this is where the rubber hits the road of the DMP program, and why haven't they been successful in the 40 years we've had the Clean Water Act, and they have been the program for agriculture. And the reason is because we need, if you're going to have this kind of program and it's going to work, you need to, you yourself, the board needs to certify that third parties are trained in DMPs, know how to apply them properly, know how to do the monitoring, if they're relied on for the monitoring, and they must be certified. And then you need a very robust quality assurance program where a random sample, like we do with the statewide and BMP program for the Forest Service, where a random sample of BMP projects, of the projects are selected and audited by the Water Board. That has to be done by the Water Board to assure that the quality is there. Why is it okay? I wonder why it's okay to cover grazing statewide. We hear a lot about how all these different areas is unique. And right, every ranch, every farm is unique. Every valley is unique. But yet, we have a statewide grazing program being developed. So there's no problem with uniqueness and coverage across the board. That's what program means. It's a program and the permits, the individual permits implemented. So what would an effective, practical, and legally compliant ag regulatory program look like? I think it would have to notice all ag operators that if they are discharging, including in 3 to 5 year storm events, that they need to come in for a permit. They need or register under a general permit. I think we need policies and procedures that assure an effective BMP program, and I talked about what those are. And in the interest of time, I won't mention them again. Certification, and you know, we need that master program option. Now, I've summarized, I've done it really quickly as I can, and I appreciate your time and your budgets.
Thank you for
that. You listen to me before you
declare. No, I apologize. It's fine. Any commentary? Thank you, Felice. I've got a couple of the speaker cards, Devin Jones.
Devin Jones, Mendocino County Farm Bureau. First of all, I can say that we are supportive at this point, kind of the rescoping proposal. We appreciate staff listening to our concerns about at least from a Farm Bureau's perspective, from my perspective in terms of helping my membership, the concern was I've got such a vast variety of different commodities, you know, what's going to be in, what's going to be out, and how's that going to work. So I do think this will help us to apply the program specifically to the vineyards and orchards, first of all, and see how that process works. I think we're already fairly advanced in that realm. Officially, farming has quite a few of our existing vineyards and orchards already enrolled, so that's beneficial. And I kind of want to address Chair Doran's question regarding Vesco versus Mendocino County. And we do have a grading ordinance that's under the state building code. The grading building code adoption and our recently adopted stormwater ordinances, we're dealing with grading issues in those realms. Vesco is very specific, but we do have grading restrictions that way. So the one thing I think I would request some clarification on, and I know that the answer really isn't out there since it's been punted to the state, but like you've seen, there's quite a significant amount of the region that is in rangeland. And from our perspective, I would ask that perhaps the staff could work with the state to come back with us with sort of a time frame of what they're thinking. The website that they developed is pretty much non-existent. It lists the meeting dates, doesn't list who's involved, doesn't list the industry's been contacted, so there is quite a bit of concern there in terms of where that program is going. I did hear that they are already starting with the federal public lands grazing, and I am concerned there as well. I remember commenting to the state board back in 2011, that was right as you were developing the region-wide program. I have two board members that have public lands grazing permits. So their open active permits were dependent upon the approval of the NEPA documents for the Forest Service with the blessing of the Regional Water Board. So if there's no consistency at the state level, that can provide some really serious issues for my members that have those grazing permits that have been approved or in the process of being approved by the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. So please ensure that there is some consistency there with how the program is applied if they're developing this throughout the state. I guess finally I'd like to say that I know you haven't touched on the barrel water question, so I really won't go into it, but I do encourage you to continue to work on that issue in some realm. I know it's sort of the big girl in the room, but I think it's something that needs to be addressed. And like Rebecca said, she really isn't a time frame for moving forward, but as soon as possible, it'd be kind of a nice ability for us to schedule kind of where the subgroups working programs are going. So thank you.
Any questions or comments? Thanks, Kevin. Jack Rice.
Jack Rice, California Farm Bureau. I just wanted to express support for the rescoping and also the sentiment that while this is a difficult process to grapple with some of the issues like how big or small do you make it, every square foot of everybody's ranch is different, and yet the industry is the same. Those tensions are out there, but the way the staff has approached it seems to be the best way to go forward. And so another observation is just that I think the staff has been very adept at managing this challenging issue. And so we really appreciate that, because that is not always the case with how Farm Bureau has seen this handled in other regions. And so we are grateful for that, the way the staff is managing it.
Thanks, Jack. Captain Zima.
I'm Catherine Zeman, the Humboldt County Farm Bureau. Thank you very much for the wonderful comment. I want to say that it is encouraging to see the changes that they have come across recently. I've been on this advisory committee from the beginning, and I was confused. I felt like it looked like a chance to try and raise as much money as you could raise by taxing anybody that had any land at all. And it was very frustrating because in Humboldt County, we have the dairies that are covered under a dairy waiver, and we've worked at the Farm Bureau, worked hard to get that up and going, and we're helping now. But this did not make sense to me. I couldn't see a cost and an effect or anything that was going to benefit the water quality. I thought it was more of a regulatory program. So I think staff took a look at what our comments were, why we were confused, and why we felt like we were being ramrodded, and they've taken a completely different approach to work with us. And I very much appreciate this last proposal that looks like it's going to be addressing where you have issues and leaving people alone to run their agricultural business if they're not providing a problem. So I appreciate it, and I want to say thank you, and thank you to staff.
Thank you very much. All right, Rebecca, let's come back and take on that question of marijuana. There's a speaker card for Julia Guerrera, and we'll take that on the phone to do that, okay? Because I believe that's, is that correct to assume that that's what you're going to talk to? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Clarify one thing, although we're rescoping and suggesting that we start with these three specific permits where ag is intense, doesn't mean that the program would not get to another group later on down the road. I just want to make that clear. But we have to start somewhere. So I just didn't want to, I just don't want there to be a misunderstanding that that everybody else is out forever in the world. Right,
we're allowed to take a phased approach, and that's what we're doing. Thank you. Okay. Marijuana identity is going to be the subject here end of the day. I'm Brian Manuel. I will be talking about options and considerations for regulating the discharge of waste from marijuana cultivation. Those of you that were at the August board meeting will recall that we updated you on what we see as the three elements of our approach to addressing or trying to address the water quality impacts associated with marijuana cultivation. That's namely enforcement, education, and outreach, and regulating through some sort of permit program. I told you that the problem is way too big for us to address through enforcement alone, even if that were a good idea. Including education and outreach makes our approach more effective. But the program is still incomplete without some sort of regulatory mechanism, some sort of framework that spells out a path for marijuana growers to comply with the Water Code and Clean Water Act and others in there. One of the reasons that we've hesitated in just jumping into putting together a regulatory mechanism that's specific to marijuana, and I remember 7.5 years ago talking to the board and facetiously mentioning we should have a marijuana permit as part of an endpoint source update. So. Now we're talking seriously about it. We had a concern about the legal implications. Cultivation, possession, and use of marijuana is a federal crime. And it's also a crime in this state for uses other than medical in compliance with the Prop 215 program. We know that the board's jurisdiction and role in protecting water quality relates to the discharge of waste rather than to the activity itself. But we needed to assure ourselves and you, the regional board, of that. And Samantha's presentation at the August board meeting confirmed that. Samantha is here today, and she is prepared to answer questions you may have, especially those of you that weren't here in September, about the legal aspects, if you have any questions. So, working with the understanding that we're well within our authority to regulate the discharge of waste associated with the cultivation of marijuana, the next question is whether and how the board would like staff to proceed in this effort. I'll present some options today that may prompt more specific discussion and direction, but the basic question we're asking you today is simply, do you, the regional board, want staff to pursue development of regulation that specifically addresses discharges of waste from marijuana cultivation operations? There are some benefits to doing so. As Rebecca mentioned, the Regional Water Board must be able to ensure that all potential and actual non-point source discharges are addressed. The non-point source policy states that all current and proposed non-point source discharges must be regulated under waste discharge requirements, waivers of WDRs, or basin plan prohibition, or some combination of those administrative tools. Developing a program specific to marijuana cultivation would, as I mentioned, give growers a framework and guidelines for developing and bringing their operations into compliance with our water quality protection regulations. And that program would be tailored to their specific commodity, similar to our dairy program and our prospective vineyard program and some of our other commodity-specific programs. Similar to those programs, such a program would give growers some certainty about what is expected of them and some assurance that they are in compliance, at least with our water quality requirements. Now, I don't know how well such a program would fare, perhaps not nearly as well as we've experienced with our programs associated with more conventional commodities and activities. But I think we'd still see a reasonable percentage of growers interested in participating in the program and implementing management measures to reduce their impacts on water quality and beneficial uses. There are definitely a lot of lawless growers and cartel growers out there. We hear about them, we've visited some of their sites. But I think we also have many growers that are concerned about the environment and who want to do the right thing. So our program should realize some water quality benefits. Our enforcement efforts would benefit from such a program because it would help to reduce the number of marijuana farms contributing to significant problems. Same as education and outreach, all of these things help and work together. And it would also give us something specific to base our enforcement on. Because right now we're typically basing our marijuana-related enforcement on all the applicable regulations and programs, and that includes 401, stormwater, basin plan, port of Cologne. The specific program would pull all the applicable requirements together in one place and simplify things both for us and for the dischargers. And we can point to the program they need to comply with and they can look to it to see what they need to do. I've heard that thing a few times today. What portion of the marijuana growing population would we want to include in such a program? Before we were talking about medicinal marijuana only. And those, while only the only technically legal grows in the state are those medicinal marijuana 215 grows on properties where a grower can legally operate or where the grower has property under permission. And we know we know that it's being grown all over the landscape for a variety of reasons, and it's all having an impact on water quality. It's not within the Regional Water Board or your staff's authority, or in most cases our ability to confirm whether a grow complies with the 215 requirements, or whether it's being grown by with the knowledge of or with the permission of the owner. We know that in no case is marijuana cultivation ever legal on public land. It's not supposed to be there, and there would not be a case where a grower could get permission from the landowner, whether it's the state or federal government. But on private property, a grow could be there and could be grown legally. We're not regulating the activity, but rather the discharge of waste. So while a regulatory program doesn't legitimize any operation, it would generally cover the discharges of waste from marijuana cultivation on private lands, both 215 and non-215. It's up to the grower to ensure they comply with all other applicable requirements and that they obtain all other necessary permissions for their activities. So that's our discharge population. If we develop a regulatory program, we're going to have to deal with many of the same questions and issues that we will face, and Rebecca's already gone over, for the regulatory programs for more conventional, traditional agricultural categories. We're going to have some additional challenges to face with this particular commodity, first and foremost being staff safety. And I don't think threats to personal safety are unique to our efforts in this area. We have encountered confrontation and threats to safety periodically in a number of areas over the years. And I think we'll be working with industry groups and other partners and continuing to work with partner agencies as appropriate. We're aware of the potential risks to staff safety and we'll plan our interactions and field work with safety considerations in mind, whether it be for enforcement, education, and outreach, or for regulatory program development and implementation. More mundane but important considerations include deciding whether a program should have enrollment and fees. We face reluctance in the traditional agricultural communities to enroll in programs. It's likely to be even more so with marijuana growers. Enrollment forms are permitted discharge lists subject to federal subpoena. Requiring enrollment and collection of fees for this particular commodity presents unique challenges, which we'll need to consider. Whatever type of program we develop, we'll need to comply with the anti-degradation policy, and we'll need to be able to explain how it does. What are we requiring? How are we verifying that it is being implemented properly and that it's performing as expected? Will we require individual growers to monitor and report? Will we perform some sort of monitoring? Felicia mentioned the five elements. I was actually going to include that just as a list of what things need to include to comply with the non-point source policy. And I was kind of kicking myself just now that I hadn't put that in here. Should our program address flow and water rights issues? Evidence indicates that the widespread marijuana cultivation in our region is having devastating effects on stream flows. And it makes sense to include requirements or expectations for water use to help to ensure that our water courses have adequate flow to maintain their designated beneficial uses. What do we want the authority to require? What do we want to include? Should our program cover marijuana grows of any size? Should it have a tiered approach for different sized operations? How much education, outreach, and technical assistance can we include with our program? We have a strong grant-funded assistance element to many of the non-point source pollution control programs in our region, and that, I think, has been part of what's ensured their success. I could give you years of non-point source-related grants that we've administered in this region. How will legal constraints or worries seem with this program? It's tricky because this is such a big problem in this region. We are leading the way with our approach on this, but it means we're going to be the first ones to encounter and try to figure out how to deal with the obstacles. We have a community that's being used to being under the radar and trying to stay out of sight, a traditional agricultural and regulatory community that's used to seeing it as an illegal activity, with many members reluctant to see it any other way. But we need to effect some changes here in the near term. So we're going to have to confront some of these challenges head on and hope that the legal and political climate can adapt or accommodate this in a way that allows us to take the steps we need to in order to protect our waters and that makes our growers more willing to come into the light and make the changes they need to. We've got a lot of challenges and we really haven't been through all the pros and cons yet. We've just been discussing this kind of brainstorming recently among staff. But based on what we've considered so far and discussed internally, we've identified a few possible tools or permitting mechanisms we could perhaps include in a future regulatory program. I'm going to qualify that these are brainstorming ideas, and we need a lot more evaluation before we're ready to settle on any particular option or group of options to present to you for consideration or direction. So I'm showing you a list here, but I'm not going to go through it in any detail right now. And also, we know that now there's more attention throughout the state and in Sacramento on how regional water boards are addressing the marijuana issue. It may lead to some kind of statewide effort to develop a regulatory mechanism, but I imagine that it's going to be years in the making. We intend to participate in any of these statewide efforts, but I think given how serious the impacts are in this region, it's likely we're going to have to develop something well ahead of anything that the statewide group does. And continue with our enforcement and education and outreach efforts in the meantime. So I brought you through our thought process today, and we're prepared to continue on this project. We'll probably form an advisory group and flesh out more issues that we're going to need to address, and the best combination of regulatory tools and the best implementation strategy we recommend for your consideration. So, for now, I'm going to go back to the question I asked when I started this presentation. Do you want staff to pursue development of regulation that specifically addresses discharges of waste from marijuana cultivation operations, or are there other questions or issues that you want us to develop or explore with you first? Be ready for us to jump in. And that's the marijuana presentation.
Thank you, Diane. Any comments or questions for that? And why don't we do this? Why don't we have Julia Carrera come and speak, and then we'll come back and take both these items.
Yeah, whatever works for you guys.
Okay.
My
purpose here is not to promote anything other than to help you all figure out what to do and to help protect small farmers of medicinal marijuana that were permitted by the Sheriff's Department in Mendocino County.
Can you state your name, please?
My name is Julia Cooper.
Thank you.
Consult with the Small Farmers Association in Mendocino County. I also do inspections on medical marijuana farms that include environmental crimes, which I've been trained by the Environmental Crimes Task Force in the state, and growing standards, which, by the way, Matt, if you look at the back of our growing standards, that's where the rating limits is in Mendocino County. The reason I'm talking to you is there's no doubt about it from the last presentation. There's a significant problem, and it's vast. I see more marijuana being grown from the sky than I do grapes. Maybe not timber, but definitely other commodities in the farming and agricultural industries. So the impact is significant, and I don't want to diminish that in any way. What I specifically want to talk about is what I spoke to Ben about and what I've spoken to the rest of your staff about, and that is how to combat the environmental crimes that are happening, that people who are legal and getting inspections but may not follow growing standards are getting swept up in and having their lives destroyed because of the other farms that are environmentally degrading our environment. And what I came up with was the fact that the people that are part of the Small Farms Association, and I would assume more people as time goes on, really don't like what's happening either. And they have been talking to their neighbors about the fact that they should be growing medical marijuana or other marijuana in a safe, environmentally friendly, sustainable way. And they're being laughed at when they do this, being told that they're dumb, and other things, so it doesn't go anywhere. But what ends up happening is that their neighbors who are doing the damage are getting raided through a warrant because most of the task force now have fish and game on it or some kind of environmental protection agency officer on it. And because of the war on drugs, farms that have been inspected are growing according to the standards, are being swept up in these raids because the war on drugs is funded by the number of marijuana plants that are eradicated. And the officers doing the eradication really don't care where those plants are coming from, nor do they care about anything but the federal law. As our sheriff told me, some of his deputies prefer to follow the federal law instead of state law. So we have a significant problem, and what I recommended was that the State Water Board come up with a toll-free number that the farmers that are legitimate, that want these other non-legitimate, environmentally degrading people to go away, they'd like to turn them in because they are degrading the environment. And they're wreaking havoc on their lives because the legitimate ones are getting raided as a way to up the numbers on the war on drugs. And there's an incentive for these, I'm going to call them inspected or attempting to conform to regulation farmers, in that they don't want their crop taken from them and being harassed by law enforcement. No farmer does. No legitimate farmer. So there's already incentive for them to call a number, and they're not getting anywhere with talking. But I think more importantly, you could add added incentive with offering some kind of reprieve from this taking of their crop when they're doing everything legal. And Mendocino County tried to do that with the permitting process, and that was shut down by the federal government, and we've all been investigated or under current investigation, including our board of supervisors. All of the information for the program has been given to the federal government, so
the members from that program, the Charlotte Small Farmers Association, no longer have anonymity in regards to the location of their farm or who they are or the medical information that was provided. That's why I'm here. I just wanted to offer the fact that this might be a really good way to support what was just talked about, to improve the environmental waterways, everything about the environment in regards to people that really don't care about anything but profiteering, and offer some kind of praise to the farmers that are trying to do the right thing in the most sustainable way and provide medicine to people that are sick.
Julie, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any comments or questions for Julie? Thanks, Trey. I really appreciate it. Can I ask you, you ladies, come back up? Excuse me? Oh, really? I had a little bit of sun on me. Let's go.
You're cold now.
Sorry, let's go back to where I was trying to go, which is actually figuring out, okay, so we have essentially two questions. There's the whole marijuana question, and then there's the Eggland Discharge Program. So, let me go back to the Eggland Discharge Program. Staff is proposing to rescope the Eggland Discharge Program. Barring concerns from this board, that sounds like what's going to happen. So I will ask at this time if there are any board members that have opposition or concerns about rescoping the Eggland Discharge Program as proposed by Rebecca Fitzgerald today. Okay, so that's good. I would like to hear from board members what we want to do in contemplative marijuana. I'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Well, first of all, I want to support us moving forward and want to make that very clear. This is going to be an extraordinary program. I don't think our ordinary rules and procedures or the way we go about business will work. And so what I recommend is we need to move forward with the plan, and we need to put a stop on it until we consult with federal authorities and have a whole checklist dealing with the particulars of the marijuana industry. I think it would be good to get an update from our legal counsel on the new Department of Justice guidelines. And this is sort of ongoing. You go ahead with your permit. I'm not necessarily asking that. There's, in my mind, an open issue on a general permit versus a specific marijuana permit. I have a bit of a bias for a general permit. I think our legal counsel has a general bias for a marijuana permit. One of the driving factors is whether we'll get sued by the environmentalists concerned about other agriculture if we put it in a general permit. So I'm throwing that out because we have some reps there, and how they react could very well determine how we handle it. I think we need a two-track program, and one is regulatory failure with very large grows and very large in scope and eventually end up in the criminal justice system. And I think we need a system of fines to benefit and to restore the environment. Fish and Game has an active program that way. Cal Fire has an active program that way. And we can do that. But that's a pretty safe program. I think we're talking about more than that. But I want us to have that track taken care of as part of the approach. The issue of subpoenas and ordinance 9.31, we have seen on the past, will require, when we have our program, going back to the drawing board, researching that issue, and then also, I believe, going to Melissa Haig of the Justice Department. But I think what we want to do is figure out what we want to do and figure out how to tweak it to get through the system. But that is a serious issue where everyone who came forward, then there's now a record that can be subpoenaed and they can all be prosecuted. And what's that? That is going to result in program failure, obviously. People don't volunteer to be prosecuted. Now, little do they know, the feds have so few resources, they're probably short of 3,000 plants, nothing would happen. But I don't think people feel comfortable in that regulatory framework. As far as I'm concerned, the only thing we're regulating are water quality damages. We have to make that finding at the middle of our staff work, the front of our staff work, and the end of our staff work.
And then I also think there's a budget element, because I'm envisioning we're going to want to do a lot of mail, and we're going to want to do a lot of goo, rather than putting boots on the ground. And when we put boots on the ground, we have to have a way to protect staff. But that's the last part of the program. I think we need to make sure we have adequate budget for a lot of postage and potentially RRRs and good access to Google Earth. And I don't think that'll be much trouble, but we got to pay something. And I know it's held up other state programs. So again, if you want to look, that's the most efficient way to target. It's the most efficient way to avoid staff endangerment, the most efficient way to target mailings that we need to submit a permit. We do have the Humboldt County Assessors, unrelated, but in regard to houses, has a whole system where they tax all the illegal structures in Humboldt County, but they don't give it to the planning department. And I think we may end up in some kind of dual track approach that way. And I also want to say we may fail and we may get our ass kicked for trying, but from my standpoint, I want to try. And if we fail, we're no worse off than anyone else. And if you think about it, the federal government targeted Humboldt County as a showcase to break the drug culture. And that's been one of the better funded marijuana eradication programs for the last 15 years. And anyone who looks out sees more marijuana every single year, even despite extraordinary funding and targeting that won't be affordable in the future. So I do think we have to try something else. Might not work, might work. But what I would do is proceed and then realize you're going to have stops and starts to deal with intricate legal issues that are going to require legal counsel and dealing both with the DAs, the sheriffs, the state attorney general's office, and the Department of Justice. All of them are going to be brought on board at some point in time. And they all have right now little different nuances. I think they're workable, but they're there. So that's my...
That was so cute.
Am I off?
Yeah.
Am I off? Okay. Stormer and I attended the federal task force meeting last week in Richmond and spoke for a while to Matt McClear of Cal EPA and our counsel there, who speaks to the federal prosecutor regularly. And he will be talking to him more next week about this and our cleanup and payment account proposal and some of the other things that we're doing that maybe are kind of pushing the envelope a little bit. Matt is very keen on us talking to Melinda Haig then, just to review the things that we're doing, be transparent with her about what we're proposing, and hopefully get back from her if she sees problems with what we're doing. Hopefully to have her say up front, I'm concerned about that.
That would be important to keep us updated.
Absolutely.
But I also don't want to premature decisions.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I'm not from us. I'm more worried about the authorities. You're always in a very challenging situation when you're doing something new. And like I advise my client, never go to the Attorney General until after late in the game. Because if you go early, they'll keep to the old policy. So I realize we can't control the state and doing it. That's probably a great thing. But that's my advice, is that you need to reserve something for your actual program. Let these ideas develop a little bit. Melissa is actually changing a little bit, but she's been very hardcore on it, and she's going to have to change. She's not ready to give us the right answer right now. I think she will be in 6 months, and so I don't know how else to advise on that. Ideas that are fundamental change are hard to take time.
Mr. Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Roy. There's at least a couple of things that we're not in the business of. One is deciding what should and should not be legal, and what should and should not be moral. What are we going to do with that? We are in the water business. We are in the discharge business. And because of that, how we deal with marijuana, I really don't care. If we, as far as I know, we don't have any peach growers in the region, okay? So somebody will find that we do have. But as far as I know, we don't. We don't have a peach program.
We do have a peach
program. We do, all right. Yeah. But the point is, the point is, we don't make a peach program. We regulate agriculture, and where necessary, we disaggregate it to get to what we want. I don't particularly want to see marijuana treated any differently than any other crop, because it is not for us to worry about. Somebody else, a state legislature or a federal Congress, has the right to determine whether this is legal or it isn't legal. For us, it is that discharge that is a problem. So, as much as we wouldn't make a difference in a peach orchard, I don't really see anything done differently here. It's a problem, and to the extent that it follows the waters of the state of California, that is my concern. If they are doing that, then we apply whatever it takes to get it to stop. Okay? That somebody has to go, in your case, as a member of the staff, I would not send you out there without an appropriate safety net behind you, i.e. the sheriff or whoever. But it's the regulation of our discharge requirements that I don't see happen. I don't care about the crop. Whatever it takes, if we need, in your opinion, I'm quite willing to go along with the staff recommendation. If you need a separate set of criteria, then that's fine. But what we need is the regulation of that discharge. It's making a mess out of things. So I don't care how we do it, let's just do it. Thank you.
Ms. Hicks?
I guess what I'm hoping for is somewhat to echo what Bill just said, but you know, as I walk across the landscapes and I work with landowners who are dealing with, you know, upgrading their road systems, changing culverts, working on timber issues and all the other agricultural issues, and they look at you and they say, why are we packing the bear under the permits, the regulations, and the pirates are seizing constantly? And I guess I just want to be able to look at them and say, well, not anymore. The same rules that have always applied to you are going to apply to these folks as well. How we get those rules to them is going to be the challenge, and how we even get to some of the folks in the community to even recognize that there are rules, it's going to be the hard thing. Because I think that a lot of the folks who are growing in ways that are causing these issues probably really don't care about what we're going to ask them to do. Some folks clearly do. Some folks clearly have a heart's desire to do this in a different way, and probably to meet the heart of what I believe 215 was passed for in the beginning, which was to help people with severe medical problems find a way to feel better. But in terms of the flip side of that, the ones that don't care, it's going to be a challenge to even get them to the table. It's going to be a challenge to try to get the people to understand that what you're doing is having a negative impact. But I'm a surface water drinker. I live up in the mountains. The water that comes into our home goes through a series of just white sand filtration tanks, but it comes straight out of the creek. And I'm more often than not, when I fill my glass with water and I hand it to my little boy who's 8, I think to myself, dear God, please protect us. Because it's a different world in the mountains now than it used to be. And it's a different world on a variety of levels. But I don't really care who you are. Water's not an option, in my opinion. You do not run the risk of hurting people's families because of your desire for greed or whatever it is that you're doing. And I want this community to be held to the rules, just the same way everybody else is held to the rules. And I have a very low tolerance for anybody escaping that. Because water is not the place to mess around. We have to have that. You don't get to pick whether or not you're going to drink water or not. So I say go for it and figure out a way to keep our water clean, especially in this situation.
comments?
One.
Okay.
One, just a thought. Just a thought. What happens if it gets legalized in 2 years, 4 years? And you do all this staff work and time and energy, it's just something to have in the back of your mind that, you know, it could just solve itself at some point. And it may not, and we at least get to watch other states.
Whether or not the activity,
but then it just falls under, I mean,
you're going to have more people cultivating, they're all going to be subject to the same water code and Clean Water Act.
But I think it may not be the same point of illegal activity. They're not going to be able to make money to, you know, sustain their illegal activity.
Sure.
And yes, then it's great, you know, backyards or farms. So I just think you invest as an organization.
But I think
with that in mind, that if that possibly could go that way. So I'm just pointing it out. It's
sure.
Just a, sort of the elephant in the room is that eventually, right?
It's a commodity that is being grown, will continue to be grown, and will be grown on an even wider scale. We won't see as much on federal land, who knows, but we'll still have a whole lot of people growing marijuana in this state and potentially impacting receiving waters. And it's an ongoing source discharging activity that is subject to regulation. So I don't think we would be wasting our effort. Hopefully we'll have... Maybe we'll have to dedicate less time to enforcement then.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have more people coming in the front door seeking to enroll in whatever our program is.
Right.
So I don't think anything we do now will be time waste.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr.
Well, I was going to say that back in August, we were talking Spanish. Today we're talking peaches. I think our message is the same. And we're just getting more affirmation from legal and from staff that there is a pathway forward, an exploring pathway forward, and I want to follow that pathway forward.
Mm-hmm.
Well said.
And I agree with that as well. The thing is, this is a very fast-changing process right now. And so if we do that, and it sounds like that's what we're going to do, is that we then have you check back with us on a very regular basis. Because I think that from what I've heard at the state level, this is that, you know, I think we're in the front of this. And I think from what Irene said too, I think there's a possibility that it becomes legalized and becomes more of a mainstream thing, but I can't assure that. And I think that what my colleagues talk about is it being just another crop out there that's subject to rules is, I think, very valid. So, John, did you want to add something?
Well, I just had one other thought, and this is premature, so this is spouting off kind of thought. You may be sorry and retract by the end of the day, but it strikes me we certainly cannot permit anything on federal lands because it's flat out illegal. Whether that can be in the second tier track on fines for environmental crimes, because we do put stuff on the Forest Service or not. And I'm not sure that's possible, and it doesn't have to come in this round of regulation, but we certainly can't permit it, but that doesn't mean we may not be able to find for environmental damage, although the federal government may claim that. But that's just a thought. I'm still stewing on that.
Okay, well, no, we can, but it's hard. If we have people that are, you know, coming in and growing illegally, trespassing, they tend to disappear, so we don't have anyone to stick an enforcement or, you know, assessment penalties on, generally.
Your fine enforcement is a very select group. It's when the federal government busts a very large grower.
Mm-hmm.
They usually confiscate. We're talking cash of $600,000. We're talking many, many plants and assets. And if you look at Cal Fire, if you look at Fish and Game, they're now really compiling those because it's restitution. You get a lot of support from law enforcement because sometimes that's a big penalty and you want to get in the court system. So I'm just saying that as part of that second tier, we ought to take a look at that issue. Not permitting, but in fine. But within our system, you're going to have probably, you know, half of 1% that the restitution system would actually get some money. But, and we also need to research whether it goes back to the general fund or to water quality, or we can have for water quality projects. But I want to make sure that we're
is comprehensive and you take a look at all the different avenues, that's very different than the regular regulatory program. Ms. Olson?
Real quick, I just wanted to say two things about the timing on this. If we were to move forward, it's a pretty long horizon, just like the other commodity specific ones. There's a lot of stuff to work out. And it, whatever it would be, is probably going to need to be a first step.
Well, with that, so let's go separately for a minute. Rebecca, the Eglin Discharge Program, I think you have specific comments here, and what you laid out, I think, is generally acceptable to this board. And so go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having the guts and courage to take it on. I appreciate it.
Well, and Diana, I would say, you know, take the steps forward, at least the initial steps, and come back and talk to us at, you know, on a very regular interval, because I think, you know, this is going to change, no matter what, it's going to change. I think we continue to use the enforcement tool which we already have. I think we try to get the third-party stuff out, like the recovery project and other stuff right now, because I think there's many legs to this tool, and proceed with the initial steps only and come back and talk to us.
Since we're going to be here every 3 months or so anyway, to give you a marijuana update, you know, it started with the enforcement being the main thing, but yeah, it'll just be an update on everything that we're doing related to marijuana.
That sounds very good. Okay, let's do this. Let's take a 5-minute break. We'll come back and take up item number 6. Thank you very much.